The students are the most privileged individuals in human history at any college. They have unfettered access to the thing that Faust sold his soul for, knowledge. The Renaissance humanists would have killed for access to this college campus or any other. Every book in human history is available to you. You have scientific laboratories open without constraint. You have magnificent library collections. You have the ability, if you want, to learn languages, to learn history. This is the most privileged position that anyone has ever been in. And to test how valuable it is, there are millions of Chinese students at this very moment who are studying nearly 24 hours a day in order to enter this environment. Now, what I'm sketching out, what I see as the university's reality, is obviously not the dominant narrative today. The dominant narrative on college campuses is that to be a female or to be an underrepresented minority is to be the target of incessant and virtually lethal oppression. During the wave of protests that took college campuses in 2015 in the fall, a group of minority students occupied the provost office at Brown University and asked to be exempt from traditional academic requirements of showing up in class or doing their exams. Why? Because they said they were fighting to survive. They were fighting for their life at Brown. Now, I posit that that's a delusion. Nevertheless, it's a delusion that is generated by an unholy alliance between students and the growing student services diversity bureaucracy. At Berkeley campus, UC Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley, the Division of Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion, which is funded at $20 million a year, the vice chancellor makes $250,000 a year, which is a pittance compared to UCLA's vice chancellor of equity, diversity, and inclusion, who makes $365,000 a year, which is much more than most faculty make. They have hung, this Berkeley division has hung banners throughout the campus emphasizing the university's paramount mission, which is to assign places in the highly competitive totem pole of victimhood. One of a health services person says, I will be a brave and sympathetic ally. Well, we all know this language of allyhood. To need an ally means that it divides the world up into the oppressed, the oppressors, and their allies. And if you're not in the oppressed or the ally category, you're one of the oppressors. One of the banners shows two underrepresented minority students who say, allow others than yourself to exist. Again, I would say that's a delusion. And the adults on campus, to the extent that they cultivate this mentality, are not doing those students any favors, because they are not seeing that they have at their fingertips opportunities to learn and to plunge into real difference, which is studying something other than yourself, to plunge into the past. They will never have that opportunity again. But this view that universities are places of lethal threat is what leads ineluctably to the sense of entitlement to silence non-conforming speech, whether through administrative fiat or through violence. After the Milo riots in Berkeley on February 1st, a bunch of students wrote op-eds in the Berkeley student newspaper justifying the anti-FA tactics that rioted both on Berkeley campus and in the city of Berkeley. And they echoed the very language of these banners. Remember, allow others than yourselves to exist. One student said, I was fighting for the right to exist. Somebody else said, again, I was fighting for my life. As long as that sense is dominant, you are going to continue to get the demands to silence non-conforming speech because it is allegedly a threat to a student's identity.